Make a reel.
And welcome back to the Pung News Podcast. You heard it here first. And more says she is going to make a TikTok. And more, what is going to be on your TikTok?
It's going to be petitioning McDonald's Canada to bring back or to bring us the Grimace milkshake.
What is that?
We also want to celebrate Grimace's birthday.
What is the Grimace milkshake?
It's like this purple thing that's been like on all around like the internet that I've been seeing. It's like Grimace's birthday, so you can get a birthday meal which has like a burger or nuggets or whatever, but it has this like Grimace like milkshake, and I don't know what it tastes like, but it's like purple.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. The listeners can't see it, but it's purple, like the same color as Grimace, and it's got like whipped cream on the top. So I guess that implies they've killed Grimace and pureed him into a milkshake.
Wait, what if they're juicing him?
What if they're like milking? Like, what if he's chained up with a milking Grimace?
Grimace just utters, like.
Do you think he likes it or do you think he hates it?
I think he likes it or I wouldn't agree to it.
What's your stance on the McRib?
I've never had a McRib, but I've always been very curious about the McRib. Because, like, what is it? It's just, it's a rib, it's a boneless rib.
Well, it's not really, it's like some kind of meat puree product shaped into the shape of ribs with bones. But except for the bones being bones, the bones is just more McRib. So, and they put a pickle and two onions on top. And that's what it is.
There's only one pickle.
Maybe two pickles.
That's ridiculous. Come on, you gotta like beef up the toppings. What are your thoughts on the McRib?
I actually enjoy the McRib, and I'm sure that Maximum Rock and Roll is rolling over in their grave because we're talking about one of the most massive global corporations in the world on the Punk News Podcast.
We're not sponsored by them. Doesn't matter.
No, I mean honestly, McDonald's is pretty shit. McDonald's is pretty shitty. But once in a while, I will go get the sweet tea there. You know what I mean? And their fries are pretty good. So, you know, I don't know. Anyway, McDonald's, you know.
Bring us the Grimace milkshake.
Yeah, bring us the Grimace milkshake. M. Moore told me before the show, breaking news, that not Blink-182, the Alkaline Trio has announced a new drummer.
Yes.
And M. Moore, I have no idea who it is. So M. Moore asked me to guess. So I am now going to guess who the new drummer for Alkaline Trio is. Is it Charlie Watts?
It is not.
Is it Josh Freese? Because he drums for every band ever.
Good guess, but no.
Is it, let's see here. Is it Penny Rimbaud of Crass?
That would be cool. No.
Is it, let's see. Oh, I know. Is it that guy that hangs out in the college quad and plays bongos and thinks it makes him look cool when it really just makes him look like a tool bag? Is that who the new drummer for Alkaline Trio is?
If they have a hacky sack, yeah.
Is it Sly Dunbar of Sly and Robbie?
It is not.
Well, then who is it, Em? Who is it?
It is Adam Willard.
Oh, but I think a lot of people actually guessed that, didn't they?
I think so. He was also like one of the top guesses for replacing Taylor Hawkins in Foo Fighters.
See, I don't think so because I don't think he's famous enough. Foo Fighters is Josh Freese now. Is that who the drummer is?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course it's going to be Josh Freese. I mean, Josh Freese is like Devo's drummer, and he's the go-to drummer when you need a drummer, so I'm not surprised by that at all. I would be surprised by Adam Willard, but I am not surprised by Adam Willard as drummer for Alkaline Trio. I don't really care about Alkaline Trio. I'm not a hater. I'm not a fan. So that's fine with me. Emma, where do you stand on Adam Willard now drumming for Alkaline Trio?
I think it's cool. He's a good drummer. I am not as familiar with Alkaline Trio as I want to be. I know a handful of songs. I like those handful of songs, and I do want to listen to more of them. They're on my list. I'm slowly getting through it because I listened to Jawbreaker for the first time a couple weeks ago.
I feel so sorry for you, Em. I'm sorry you had to go through that.
Was really good. I liked it.
Sure. Em, I think you have a Stockholm syndrome.
They were good. Justice for Jawbreaker. But yeah, I think Alkaline Trio are good. I need to listen to more of them to kind of get a more well-rounded opinion.
Blake Schwarzenbach, the only person that Sturgeon asked to be on the last Leftover Crack record that said no. which hurt him deeply. So there you go. So either that makes you like Leftover Crack more, or it makes you like Jawbreaker more. Yeah, you decide. Em, I'm going to read you the short Josh Freese resume, and then we will get the show started.
Yes.
Josh Freese currently drums for Foo Fighters, Devo, and the Vandals. Previously, he has drummed for Guns N' Roses, A Perfect Circle, Nine Inch Nails, Sublime with Rome, The Offspring, and of course, he will always be a drummer for the greatest rock band ever. Who's that, Em?
Greatest Rolling Stones?
The Dwarves, Em, the Dwarves. Oh, it looks like he also drummed for Sting. That's a Weezer, apparently Weezer too. That's a really cool. Impressive resume, isn't it? I gotta say.
That's so many different like bands. That's sick.
And kind of different genres too. So, yeah, anyways, nice. People on here to listen to us talk about Josh Freese not the most current punk rock one, but the one before that, I sit next to Josh Freese and Mark Mothersbaugh at Black Dahlia's 3-hour acoustic show, and it was a lot of fun. And Mark Mothersbaugh was a weirdo, let me tell you, in a good way. So anyways, let's get on with the show, as they say. And so, Em, tell us about this band. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, no, actually, one thing I got to mention. July 22nd, it is the next Philly Record Freakout. That's in Philadelphia at Philomoka, 531 North 12th Street. Last time we had a blast, and we're doing it again. There's going to be 14 to 15 sellers, 15 to 20,000 records, and it's going to be a real blast. So come on out. That's July 22nd. At Philomoka in Philly. Em's going to tell us about Teen Jesus and the Gene Teasers. And my first question to you, Em Moore, Teen Jesus, is that a fair name? Because, of course, Lydia Lunch had the band Teenage Jesus and the Jerks. Is it fair for this band to call themselves Teen Jesus and the Gene Teasers?
I think it is more than fair for them to call themselves Teen Jesus and the Gene Teasers, because it's a cool ass name and it sticks with you. And the idea of a teenage Jesus just skateboarding makes my day. And it could be an homage to that band as well. But I think it's a fun name. They're super cool. But yeah, they are from Australia and they are like a punky, grungy, poppy-ish band, and they're really cool. They just announced their debut album called I Love You, and they released their EP Pretty Good for a Girl Band in 2022. It rocks. It's really good. Check it out. There's lots of energy on it. Girl Sports was one of the singles from it, and it has a really funny video. So I'm excited for their new album because I want to hear like what they're going to talk about and what it's going to sound like and like all this kind of stuff. And they released a video for their lead single called Never Saw It Coming. And I was surprised because it's an acoustic song. It's very emotional and very heavy, but like it needs to be. And I also saw that it's the first song that Nev from the band has written for the band specifically. And it's the first one that she sings on. So that's really, really nice, especially with the content of the song and what it's about and everything. And then the video, it starts with a title card that says to the person who this song is about. And then there's a heart and it says, fuck you. And then there's another heart, which I think fits this song perfectly. Yeah, like the video is good because it shows like someone both kind of like reliving a hard time and that there is healing and there is life and there is joy, and what somebody thought they could take away, they can't, because it will come back. And as the opening line says, in 7 years, your cells regenerate. So I think it's good. It's a very powerful, very moving song. I am looking forward to hearing the rest of the album. I do think they are going to get a little bit more punky and lean more into that side of things. But it is nice when a band showcases range and especially does that with something that means a lot to them. So that's Teen Jesus and the Gene Teasers. What do you think about them, John? What are your thoughts on the name?
No, I think the name is fair. I mean, honestly, like, I'm not necessarily a huge Lydia Lunch fan. And Lydia Lunch says a lot of mean things about a lot of people. So, yeah. And that's her prerogative. So I think it's cool that they can kind of steal the name. I wonder if they're aware of Teenage Yeast and the Jerks or not. I for some reason, I'm of the opinion is if you know the band's name and you steal it, that's fair. But if you don't know the seminal band and you steal it, then that's just kind of poor form. So I'd be interested to see if they know of Teenage Yeast and the Jerks. And frankly, people love Teenage Yeast and the Jerks. Kind of unlistenable, I got to say. Kind of unlistenable. It's one of those bands that one says, like, oh, you know, they were so abrasive, so different, you know, so challenging, yeah. Which is true. But is anybody actually, like, I feel like most noise music never gets listened to or barely gets listened to. So not that Teenage is noise, they're avant-garde. I feel like most avant-garde never gets listened to. Like, you know, like I said before with Boris, like, one time I was listening to a Boris album, yeah. Like, literally 60 minutes of feedback. And I'm like, what am I trying to prove to who? Like it's just feedback, you know. Anyways, anyway, yeah, this was all right. I didn't love it. It's kind of got the Lilith Fair thing. I would be interested to see some of their punkier and faster stuff put next to this kind of softer, quieter stuff. I'm always interested that, like, when someone writes a breakup song or How Dare You Dump Me song or whatever, and it's about a specific person, in a way that kind of pays respect to the person, as in you're worth writing a song about, but also it kind of like attaches that song to that person forever. Although I think after a while, the singer kind of just disassociates the person from the song and it just becomes a song. Like, do you really think every time Carly Simon sings the best breakup song ever, you are so vain? Do you think she really thinks about Warren Beatty every time she sings it? Probably not at this point. Right. So, oh, yeah, no. But I, you know, it's like the message of songs like these are often, you hurt me, how dare you hurt me. But if the person doesn't care that they hurt you, then that only kind of makes them feel cooler. So I'm always, but then on the other hand, as Carly Simon says, the song isn't really about you, it's about me and how I feel in your wake, if you will. I'm just saying it's an interesting dynamic. It isn't necessarily unique to this track, but it's always, I guess, an open and honest and vulnerable move to specifically write a You Hurt Me song to one specific person, because it kind of pays them tribute. And I do wonder if those people often feel, oh, I feel so bad now, or if they're like, haha, this is great. I mean, or like you drama queen, or they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm so cool, I made, like some people get off on that. Some people like making girlfriends or boyfriends feel bad because it makes them feel like they have power or whatever, you know? So I do wonder the effect of these kinds of songs.
I think it's a cathartic thing for the person writing it. And I don't think that, well, I think that's what it is at its heart.
Is You Are So Vain the best breakup song ever?
Try to think of, like, good breakup songs. You're So Vain is very good. I do enjoy that song. But, like, well, yeah, I guess you can, like, scream to it. You know, you can scream along with it. That's good. I think that's what makes a good breakup song, is you can have a range of emotions while you're listening to it. You know, like, you cycle through all the stages, right?
You're so vain. I bet you think this song is about you. You're so vain. I love when Mick Jagger comes in with his country accent, which is great. It's great, great song, great song. Anyways, here's another great song. John Wayne Was a Nazi by MDC.
Yeah.
Now covered by the Hallucination and Fucked Up, the second Ooh. Hallucination Fucked Up cover and combo track. Yes. The first being Electroshock, which was a cover by Jane Dangerous Rhythm. Actually, that's a track that I never heard of, honestly, before, but it was cool. The new version of John Wayne Was a Nazi is very different than the original. It's almost like, I want to say it's approaching dubstep. It's a mostly electronic with a lot of bleeps and blaps and, you know, heavy bass drops. And the readers absolutely hated it. And I thought it was really rad and really cool. I think it would be cool if they just did a straight cover. But on the other hand, when you just do a straight cover, especially of a punk song, it's fun, but it's not special, and it doesn't really elevate. I thought this track was kind of special and kind of elevated. It was really, really neat and a really cool thing to do. And I really hope they put out these two songs on a 7-inch. Effed Up has been doing a lot of stuff that has been digital only lately, which is kind of frustrating. I'm like, I'm sure you can sell at least 300 of these. So, like, press them up and get some money and let me get a physical one. Emma, what did you think of this? And then I will tell you my quick F Up story after you talk.
Okay. I love this. It is so good. Because like Fucked Up in the Hallucination, they did their Here's the Unity tour.
I saw Fucked Up, and the opening was Restraining Order, and it was real cool. They did almost all of the new album, which was pretty cool. I mean, Fucked Up always has a really cool tours. We're not always Fucked Up often does really cool tours where the set list is not something that you can expect. The best Fucked Up set I ever saw was the amazing Zodiac one, where they did like all of Year of the Dragon, all of Year of the Pig, like half of Year of the Rat, and like another year off, and it was just absolutely amazing. And they were like a nine-piece band for that for some reason. On this one, they did all of One Day. But my question was, on the Hallucination tour, did they play together or did they play separate sets? It was unclear to me. Do you know?
So I didn't go, but I know from people who did. And it was, they did separate sets, and then at the end, they did two songs together.
Wait, was it
there was also
songs?
Wrestling. I don't know what songs they were. They just said that the bands played together at the end. But yeah, like there was wrestling and stuff. Like it looks like it was an absolutely insane show. I couldn't get to it, so unfortunately I couldn't go. But again, people I know who did had an absolute blast, and it looked so fun. I saw some videos online and stuff, and oh my god, like these two bands paired together are so good. And like in the on these covers, like you get the, you know, it's just they pair together so well. And I really, really hope, and I don't think this is gonna happen, but I really hope they do like a collaborative album, because I'd listen to more of this. It's awesome. Like, yeah, John Wayne was a Nazi, like you mentioned. It's way more leaning into electronic. It slowed down a bit so you can really hear the lyrics and really get the full meaning out of stuff. And like Damien sounds great, and it's just awesome. Electroshock, I never heard of the song either. Listen to it, and it's like, this is the best thing. I was listening to both of them before we started the podcast, and it's just, yeah, the artwork is great too. So please do more stuff together, Fucked Up in the Hallucination. Y'all rock.
What was I gonna say? I was gonna say something.
Did you find the songs they did?
Honestly, like you know, some bands have fans that immediately go and put the set list on Setlist FM.
Oh yeah.
For some reason, Fucked Up, people aren't that dedicated to it.
I found a
set list from Cambridge, Massachusetts, but did Hallucination play that?
No, I think they were all Canadian dates.
Yeah, so I see another one from like Victoria, British Columbia, but that's May 19. Was that with Hallucination?
I don't think so. I think all of them happened in June. But
yeah. Anyways, so as we were saying, Fucked Up has a bunch of digital only stuff now, which is frustrating me as a fan. So I emailed them and I said, Fucked Up, I've got a small cassette label and you guys haven't put out the last two mixtapes on cassette. Now, if you guys are just waiting to do it, that's cool. But if you have too much on your hands and you're looking for someone to do it, I'll do it for you. Do you want me to make cassette tapes for you? And you know what the response was?
Was it yes?
No, it was go to hell. No, it was thanks, but no thanks.
So
we'll see. I mean, I really hope they put all this stuff out. I mean, there's so much digital only stuff now. There's the Hallucination stuff. There's mixtape 7. There's mixtape 6. There's at least two live shows. There's David Comes to Life in 2011. There's another live show, live at CBGB's. I think maybe even one other one. I really wish they would put this stuff out, even on cassette, if not CD or record. But yeah, man. So
checked it. The May 19th show was a Here's Unity tour.
Okay, well then, according to Setlist FM, more.
Yes.
I lost it again, and I will tell you. and I one other thing that I wanted to mention about effed up, but I can't remember what it was.
Physical releases.
So according to May 19, the last two songs they did was One Day and Dose Your Dreams. Which of course is some newer effed up stuff. I don't know. What's your opinion of effed up rarely now doing hardly any of the old stuff? When I saw them do any of the old stuff, it looks like in BC they did just Police, and that's that of the old stuff.
Police is good. Police is solid. Police holds up. I like the old stuff. I like a lot of the new stuff. So I appreciate them wanting to be like, hey, we have newer stuff. We're going to be playing this because this is who we are as a band now and stuff like that, and throw in like a couple of the older ones. So I respect it. I think it's good. Like Those Your Dreams is killer. It's such a good album. There's so many good songs on it. And like, I mean, that's a bit older now. Like One Day is also very good. But yeah, it's interesting. I like when bands do that. And it's, yeah, we're not like a greatest hits band. We're like, we'll play a couple of them, but we're still evolving. We're still changing our sound. And here we are. We're going to play it.
Okay, let's see.
What are your thoughts?
You know, it depends. I think when a band is really on fire, it's real cool when they come out and just play their new album. Although, and you know, it is cool, like when F'd Up only does the Zodiac stuff, or they do like whole album shows, which is always fun. Though I think, and I guess they don't want to be chained debating the public or police, but I think they could break those tracks out once in a while, you know, a little bit more often, kind of Melvin style, you know, one out of every, you know. I don't think they would ever do it, but it would be real cool if they did like a throwback tour where they only did pre-first album stuff, which would be really rad. I don't think they'd ever do that. But speaking of reliving the old memories, Generation Sex has announced their first UK tour. They've done a few tours, I mean, a few shows before, but I don't think a whole lot. Of course, Generation X is Billy Idol of Generation X, Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols, Tony James of Generation X, and Paul Cook of the Sex Pistols. And they play Sex Pistols and Generation X tracks, and I think a few covers here or there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about this, except for, yeah, it's kind of an oldies act, if you will. But honestly, it looks really, really cool to me, and I'd love to see this. And I really hope they play USA. Just because, you know, I actually am going to go see Billy Idol in September, but Billy Idol doing all, well, and of course, and what is the Billy Idol Sex Pistols connection?
Billy Idol was in the Bromley Contingent.
And
was in Flowers of Romance.
Was?
Wasn't he?
I didn't know that. Maybe I don't think he was, but he did roadie for the Sex Pistols. So I would love to see. I mean, I've actually never seen Billy Idol. I'm super psyched to see him. He does kind of the same set list for the past, like, 30 years. In a way, you can't blame him. But I would love to see Generation Sex. I think that'd be so cool. Here's a set list. Ready, Steady, Go, Wild Youth, Pretty Vacant, Problems, Black Leather, which is a later day Sex Pistols track, Kiss Me Deadly, Dancing With Myself with the Sex Pistols. That's pretty cool. And, of course, some of the Sex Pistols actually are on the original Generation X recording of Dancing With Myself. Silly Thing, later day Sex Pistols cover, King Rocker, God Save the Queen, Your Generation, and My Way. Interestingly, really only two classic era three classic era Sex Pistols tracks, which is it. I would have thought it'd be more Sex Pistol heavy, but I guess Paul Cook and Steve Jones really don't care about the Sex Pistols, and Billy Idol still does care about Generation X, so maybe that kind of explains it, you know?
Yeah, that could be. Maybe there's some, like, is there legal stuff with the Sex Pistols thing?
I don't think, but the rule is the following, is if a venue, this is USA, of course, not England or wherever, but if a venue has a ASCAP or BMI license, it means the performing artist can cover any track they want. Hypothetically, you're supposed to write down the tracks that are covered and submit them, and then the owner of the compositions get paid money for those tracks, those songs. So the only time an artist cannot play another artist's songs is when, I mean, that's pretty much the only time, is when there's been a lawsuit between that artist and other artists, and there's not an issue of copyright infringement, but trademark infringement. The most famous one, of course, was John Fogerty could not play songs that he wrote in CCR because it was trademark issues, not copyright issues. So generally, you can. I just think the Sex Pistols, I mean, I guess either it's cool or it's not cool, but all the Sex Pistols have pretty much poo-pooed the Sex Pistols at one time or another. John Lydon kind of vacillates between saying the Sex Pistols were great and that the Sex Pistols are old news, you know, whereas Paul Cook and Steve Jones, they kind of are like, well, actually, you know, the stuff we did after the Sex Pistols is better, which it's not. But they can say that if they want. So even though this is kind of an oldies thing, I love to see this. I think it's just so cool. I think it's a cool idea. And I think they play clubs, not even that big of a venue. So imagine seeing Billy Idol in a club. Actually, I mean, I would be psyched to see Billy Idol just do Generation X stuff, you know. But imagine seeing him in a club doing Generation X and Sex Pistols with some of the Sex Pistols. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. There's live videos from like 2018 and they sound very good.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
It'd be real cool if they did a live album. I mean, what if they did like a live album?
They should.
What do you think of it? What do you think of the name Generation Sex?
A little cringy.
See, I thought for like a cover act, fair enough. I'll let it slide, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think they should have been called?
They could have gotten the X Pistols.
That's not, but there was an X Pistols though, you see. That's a good title.
Oh, that's true. It's all good.
Okay, let's see. And one last thing, and then we're going to play a track. This is, Graf Orlok. Graf Orlok has announced a new EP. It's going to be their last EP. It's a little unclear if they're breaking up or not, but the new track, the new EP is called End Credits, and we debuted in the Court of the Crimson King, which is an homage to not the King Crimson track, but to the movie Children of Men. And the new EP is all about songs from the apocalypse, movies about the apocalypse. And of course, with Graf Orlok, the vast majority of their songs are about movies, and they take samples from the movies. And it's very intense, hardcore, verging on grindcore. And also, one of the most fun things about Graf Orlok is they have the coolest packages ever. Their Doombox EP, or 10-inch, folded out into an actual cardboard boombox. Their Alien CD had an alien face hugger on it that you had to peel off the CD to listen to the CD. They had another one that was like a human torso skinned and wrapped around the record. And they just do like the coolest packaging. So anyway, I thought this track was really cool. I dug it. I think Graf Orlok is cool. Astoundingly to me, like literally astoundingly to me, Em, is the readers hated this. Like they were making fun of this, but they were saying how great clowns were. And I feel like, they pull the punk of the now card all the time. And right. I feel like this only discredits them even more. It's like, if you don't respect and know Graf Orlok, like who were like a seminal late 90s, early 2000s hardcore band when hardcore was in one of its apexes, then it's not me, it's you. Like this is kind of like them saying, but like Crass, you know, who cares about Crass? I mean, I'm not saying Graf Orlok is a bad example. Graf Orlok is not like the love of Crass. But like Youth of Today, Youth of Today, why are you covering Youth of Today? I thought this was punk news. Why are you talking about Youth of Today? Or why are you talking about Gorilla Biscuits? It's like Graf Orlok is like landmark and awesome. I don't understand how they can make fun of Graf Orlok. I could get if they ignored it, but like Graf Orlok is definitely a respected band that was one of the main late 90s, early 2000s hardcore mainstays. Like they were like on the scene at this period. Like Graf Orlok is big or respected. I don't get it, Em. I don't get it. I really don't get it. Like they're making fun of me for covering Graf Orlok when. It's like if I'm talking about baseball and I start talking about Hank Aaron, and they're like, "Who's Hank Aaron?" Like they're making fun of me for knowing who Hank Aaron is. You know what? When I'm talking about baseball, like I'm at a loss. I'm literally at a loss.
They don't know, and they're scared, so they lash out.
They're talking about how great like clowns are. You know, I mean, fine, clowns is fine.
Yeah, but, clowns
are cool. I mean, come on. I'm astounded. I really am astounded.
Well, it was funny because the name like rang a bell, but I don't think I've ever listened to them before because they're named after Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, ha, name, but I never heard of them. And I listened to this for the podcast and stuff. It rips. It's awesome. Like this is so good. So yeah, like definitely like want to check out more stuff by them. And it's so cool that they use all the samples and like the movies and stuff. Like that's super, super sick. Were they like one of the first bands doing that?
No, bands definitely have been doing samples in hardcore since, you know, at least the early 90s. Maybe, Nausea was doing it in the late 80s, but Graf Orlok made it definitely a centerpiece of their identity. And they also maybe interwove it into their music more than other bands because almost all their songs are about movies. And so they sample the movie. Here's something funny. Their album, Corpserate Greed, they took the CDs and they put them in Lord of the Rings DVD boxes, which is pretty funny.
That's awesome. Oh my God. Because, yeah, everything that you said about like their marketing and stuff just sounds so fun and so cool. And on this too, they have like a song about Snowpiercer, and I'm super excited to hear that. I want to know what they're going to, how they're going to frame it.
They're playing a New York show, and I'm thinking about asking if they want to play Philadelphia, but it's like, I mean, that'd be cool, but I don't know. It'd be cool, but do I need to put another thing on my plate is the question, but it'd be pretty cool to do it. I mean, especially if it's like their last tour. I don't know if it's the last album. But I don't know if it's going to be like their last tour or not, you know? So anyway,
right.
Grant Warlock is freaking awesome. I just don't get people talking smack on them. I just don't get people back in my day in punk rock, like if someone said to you, hey, do you have the Conflict unreleased demo from 1979 that only is instrumental and has no vocals? And you'd be like, no, I don't have it. And they'd be like, poser, how do you not have it? How dare you come into punk and you don't have the unreleased Conflict demo from 1979, you know? And then, but now they're like proudly and willfully ignorant of the history of punk rock. But then they salute like Epiphat bands. Like, how dare you pull the Too Punk For You card and you're saluting Epiphat bands and not bands like Graf Warlock?
I don't know. Maybe they go with what's comforting and what's familiar.
Well, that is what it is. It's the wimps that are scared to listen to dangerous music. And they really just want to listen to Radio Rec that has a slight edge as opposed to crazy genius stuff like Graf Warlock and their boombox that folds out to and then a freaking awesome actual cardboard boombox, which I think is just so great. So great, Em. So
that
great.
Is really cool.
So anyways, let's play a track. Em, what track should we play?
Let's play John Wayne Was a Nazi by Fucked Up and the Hallucination.
And we are back. And speaking of covers, here's another cover. Catbite and Brian Fallon have covered the Slackers. And they covered the Slackers track. Yes, it's true. And quite amusingly, they did a video. And the video was in an alternate world where the Chris Gethard show is still running. And it's the Chris Gothard show. And both Brian Fallon and Catbite are now goth. And I thought this was great and cool and awesome.
This was super. Oh my God, it's fun. It's funny. The cover kicks ass. It's 10 out of 10. Like, Chris Gothard showing up has the makeup on, everything, the whole like crowd's all like dressed up. It's just, it's perfect. If this was a real show, I would watch it 100%, hands down. Like, give us a Chris Gothard show, please. And
filmed at, oh, I'm so sorry, good. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, and like the band's called the Slackers, which is just hilarious. Where was it filmed?
At Philomoka, the best venue in Philadelphia.
That's exciting. Well, it looks very cool.
Yeah, so this is cool and rad. And I also did love how the readers, and I shouldn't really focus that, you know, I don't know why I've been focusing on them lately, which I really shouldn't. Well, part of it is they, and they've been so negative lately, negative. Like, terrible. I don't know what's up with that. I don't know what's up with that, man. What's their problem? They've been so negative. The point is, you know, the readers hate Catfight because they're awesome and they love Brian Fallon. But what do they do, Em, when their hero from 2012, Brian Fallon, does a track with Catfight? What do they do then, Em?
Oh, absolutely explode.
How do they justify the cognitive dissonance, Em? How?
They launch just around, and like, you know, when you let go of a balloon in a cartoon, it just goes woo, above in the ceiling. That's what they're doing.
Well, I am just loving the rise of Catbite. It's very cool and very great. And it's cool, it's cool that Brian Fallon was down to clown around. So you got to give him that for sure, you know? And why have the readers been so negative lately? Like, so negative. What's up with that? I mean, they're always negative, but now it's like literally now it's like 95% negative. What's up with that?
I have no idea. Like, there are commenters where they usually post like good things, and now they're like, nope, hate this. And it's like, you didn't even listen to it because it sounds like something that you would love, first of all. Or like, you know, stuff like that. People not giving things a chance and just shitting on stuff just for the sake of shitting on stuff. Like, it makes no sense. Like, Jesus, I don't know. I'm in the same boat. I'm very confused because it's that there's been like weird personal stuff. Like, it's just strange.
What do you mean weird personal stuff?
Well, just like people like using our names.
Oh, using our name. We'll get used to that.
It's just weird. I don't like,
The more notoriety you get as a writer, that's going to happen. I actually had some
clients. Oh, well, yeah. Like, that's good.
I recently had some clients say, they were saying like, oh, these people are saying mean stuff about me on the internet. And it's like, yeah, that sucks. But in a way, that's good because the higher you get, the more haters you're going to get. And that means you're making an impact. It doesn't mean the haters are right. It's just, you're going to have to get used to it. That's just part of it, you know?
Oh, no, so, for sure. Definitely. It's a badge of honor for sure. It's just always disconcerting when it happens.
And just think, Em, one of these days you might work your way up and start to get death threats, just like me. How exciting.
I already have.
Oh, you have? Well, there you go.
I've made it.
You've made it. Speaking of bands that have made it, Psy Warfare is playing two USA shows. Both shows are with Vosh, which is a very cool, I guess you would call them goth or post-punk band, or, you know, in that general area. I guess dark wave, maybe. Well, I don't even really know what dark wave is. And what is dark wave?
I always thought dark wave was like electronic music that had a very dark undertone, like ambient.
Yeah, I think you're right. So Vosh isn't dark wave. They're just, I don't know, post-punk-ish, goth-ish, I guess, you know, kind of like cool. What's that band, This Mortal Coil? What's This Mortal Coil? Are they goth? What's This Mortal Coil?
This Mortal Coil, I don't know.
Well, we'll just call it goth. Anyways, we're playing Vosh and Savage Mystic. Savage Mystic is kind of like one of these whacked out black metal bands that includes Francis Kano of Integrity, and of course Psy Warfare is headed by Dwed Halyan of Integrity. And the reason they're playing two shows is because Psy Warfare is also playing Integrity's playing This Is Hardcore Fest the day after they play Psy Warfare plays Philadelphia, and then Psy Warfare is playing Brooklyn, I think. No, Ridgewood, New Jersey. At any rate, Psy Warfare is real. I mean, Integrity is freaking awesome, and I'm super excited to see This Is Hardcore. Psy Warfare is really cool to see live. I was making fun of Noise Act, and I gotta say, I don't like listen to Noise Act after Noise Act. But sometimes, you know, you know, you're playing Generation X, and then you're playing, I don't know, Bay City Rollers, and then you're playing Pilot. Oh, It's Magic, and then you're playing You're So Vain, and you want something that just like destroys the room. And maybe you'll put on one of those, you know, Psy Warfare 7-inch singles. That being said, seeing Cyber Warfare live is really cool because it's, I mean, it's not music, it's noise, but it's kind of like a movie because there's all these far out sounds and there's people on stage and every show is kind of different because there's a lot of improvisation and there's guys on stage in Balaclava. Last time I saw Cyber Warfare, it was crazy. It was in Baltimore. And so Dwed was like making noises with like this homemade machine that he made that like just made noises, you know, kind of like a theremin, but it wasn't, it was something else whacked out. And there's three guys on stage in balaclavas. One guy just had a trash can and he was just like hitting it with a baseball bat the entire time. Another guy had like a baking pan, like two baking pans, and he was like smashing them together. And another guy was just like running around the room, like just finding whatever texture he could and like smacking it with like a metal bar or like running the bar up and down like the heater or something and just making and just like screaming. Yeah. And so it's just like this far out thing that is like really cool to see, about a half hour. So, and I think it's cool they've got two more bandy bands opening for them, you know, because three noise acts in a row is a lot, but two bandy bands and the noise act, that's kind of cool. So I'm psyched for this, Em. You're not going to get a chance to see this tour because you don't live in Bridgerton or Philadelphia. But yes, yeah, so Cyber Warfare is cool.
They make the good noise.
Here's another thing I got a ton of hate at Punk News. Moira Weaver of Mixtapes and the Mimes is putting out a solo record. The solo record is called I Was Due for Heartbreak, and the single Crush on You Part 2 is out. It's got kind of an indie rock, almost Tegan and Sarah-ish thing, which I would say somewhat similar to the Mimes, a band that I absolutely loved. I guess they're still around, so I do love. I don't get too hung up on the readers, but I mean, with all bands, but especially with bands fronted by women, because, you know, the creeps are always guys. I've yet to see a female creep, honestly. It's like, we only want women to, I mean, you know, it goes back to the Danny Miller thing. Danny Miller's never going to be your girlfriend. They only want the performer to be like, so maybe she would go out with me. And so when they deviate from that and do something else, then the readers like hate it. And, you know, and so, I mean, I don't know, man. It still is kind of tough to be a female artist, at least in the punk scene in some respects. But I thought this track was real cool. I liked it a lot. I'm super excited for the album. And I like how she's – it almost has almost like a 90s like Sunshine rock vibe track to it, almost like that band not Lit. What was that band? Steal My Sunshine. Who was that? Was that Lit? Is that Steal My Sunshine? Or almost like maybe Ace of Base. Or there's another band that I'm thinking of exactly. No, I know. The Cardigans. It kind of reminds me of The Cardigans, which I think is cool. And so I think this is cool and rad, and I'm excited for the album.
Moira Weaver rocks. It's just that simple. Great
voice.
Is
it Moira or is it Moira? Do you know? I don't know.
I think it's Moira because there's no I. I think for Moira, you need an I.
M-O-I-R-A, Moira. And she's Moira? She's Moira?
Yeah, I think she's Moira.
Hmm.
But this, I really like the song. It was cool. And yeah, exactly. Like, it has kind of like a Mimes feel to it. And the Mime stuff was nuts. It was cool. Like,
that
the videos were crazy.
The Mimes like kind of didn't really catch on, but they only did like one small tour really, or two tours, and they put up. But like, I thought the Mimes was astoundingly good, and I think this is kind of as good or almost as good.
It's again, it's super cool, and then like her new promo picture is really fun. She's in a tub, it is. And there's like so many like creepy clown like dolls and stuff like around. She's on a Garfield phone. It's just like super awesome. So I'm looking forward to the album. I think her solo stuff's going to be awesome. The bands she's been in have been great. So
the crazy thing is she's only like 30 or 32 or something, and she's been in bands for like almost 20 years now. It's great. Let me take a look. Ooh, here.
Amazing.
Mixtapes go all the way back to, well, I guess just 2010. That's not that long ago. I feel like it was much longer, but I guess I'm wrong.
Was she in a band before Mixtapes?
Maybe. I don't think so though.
Okay.
The weird thing is like one of her big breakthroughs was Heart-Shaped Guitar Masked Intruder, and that felt like it was so long after Mixtapes, but that was only 2 years after Mixtapes. That's weird. Life's weird, man. Time is weird.
Time is weird. Time doesn't exist.
She was in Boys before Mixtapes. No, Boys was after Mixtapes. Well, who knows then? Anyways.
Yes.
So fine. She hasn't been doing music that long. Only 13 years. So there.
It's still a long time.
So anyways, this was cool and I dug it. I guess the crazy thing is the amount of recordings that she's been on. She's been on a crazy amount of recordings. 3 for the boys. I'm just going to do a very quick count up here. Ojukubu Station. 4. So that's 7. Mixtapes. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 with the mimes. So she's put out at least 19 releases. That's pretty crazy.
That's amazing. Holy. And she will continue to do so. Yeah, the mimes are awesome.
And she was also in the Homeless Gospel Choir. Let's see how many albums they put out. Let's see here. Oh, but she's not on all of them. I think she's only on a few of them. And at any rate, so she's done a ton of stuff, and it's crazy how much stuff she's put out. I hope she does a Philadelphia show. Okay, so let's see. We got one more track. Here's another throwback, Jack. We're talking Triumph of Death. probably my favorite cover band ever, and here's why. Triumph of Death is a Hellhammer cover band. And the main person behind Triumph of Death is Tom G. Warrior, currently of Triptychon and formerly of Celtic Frost, also of Hellhammer. And they've been playing some live shows. So basically, it gets a cover band with the main guy singing in the cover band of the original band, which I think is cool. I've seen them live once, and they were frigging awesome. They really, really were frigging awesome. My only comment would be after, like, every third song, Tom G. Warrior would say, like, he'd be like, He's like, we're old, so I'm glad we're able to deliver to you guys. And people go, yeah, John. Or he'd be like, I can't believe people care about this old music that's so old. And people go, yeah, Tom. It's like Tom, you're kicking ass. You don't need to tell people that you're old. That only kind of like hurts you. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be so much better if you just got there and just whipped ass. Like, when Lemmy got up on stage in 2010, he didn't say, I'm old and I've been Lemmy for 45 years now. He just whipped ass and people were like, holy shit, it's Lemmy. You know, Danzig.
Yeah.
I know I talk about Danzig all the time, but Danzig doesn't say, I'm old and people still care about Misfits. He just gets up there and friggin' kills it. And people are like, damn, Danzig's old. People are like, damn, Danzig kills it. So Tom G. Warrior, who I think is a little bit younger than Danzig, kills it. So he doesn't need to say, I'm old. Like you're killing it. So you don't need to qualify or kind of try to temper expectations because you're killing it as if you were 20. So you don't need to say that you're old and you don't need to demean yourself. Just get up there and whip ass. You don't have to say anything. If you want to say, hey, thanks for caring about this after 40 years, that's cool. But don't say that you're old or that you're surprised that people still care because you are old. No one cares that you're quote old and you're not coming across like when you go see Tom Waits or you see Bob Dylan, he looks old. But Bob Dylan's still pretty cool live. But you're like, oh, man, like Bob Dylan's old. When you go see Tom G. Warrior, you don't think, man, that guy's old. You think, wow, that's Tom G. Warrior. Like, he doesn't look old. You know what I mean? So then don't be like, I'm so old. Just whip ass. You know what I mean? That's my only comment. So anyway, the point being, when I saw them at Maryland Death Fest, they were frigging awesome. I am so psyched they're doing a live album. I think that's very cool. I'm always pro live album. The more lives that can get documented, I'm all for. Because if it sucks, well, But if it's like these kind of, I don't want to say hell, I mean, Triumph of Death is once in a lifetime because they've done a bunch of at this point, but kind of these limited engagement things. If we can get a document of that, I would say we definitely should because it's not going to be around forever. So it's very cool to get this kind of thing. Also, I mean, even though Tom has gotten lots of props for Celtic Frost and Triptychon, it's cool that he's getting props specifically for Hellhammer, which I think is cool. So I think this is very rad. And what's your perception of this? But also, what do you think of the dance where it's the main guy from Hellhammer playing Hellhammer, but he's not calling it Hellhammer. He's calling it something different. Like, if he called it Hellhammer, people would be like, this is stupid. It's not Hellhammer. Tom's just trying to capitalize on his old stuff. This isn't Hellhammer. But if he calls it a tribute to Hellhammer, then everyone's like, yeah, this is great. It's awesome. When it's literally the exact same thing. You know what I mean? Like, literally the only difference is the name. And like, it's not like a case of Dead Kennedys where people go see Dead Kennedys and are still sometimes expecting to see Jello because they don't know that Jello's not in the band anymore. You know, like,
oh my gosh,
everyone knows the deal. So is this all a needless dance or is there something important to the significance of calling it Triumph of Death as opposed to Hellhammer?
Maybe it was because he wanted to call the band Triumph of Death and couldn't. So now he's like, yeah, I'm just going to have a cooler name.
I know he's calling it Triumph of Death because he doesn't want to say that it is Hellhammer. You know, like Steve Ignor is having problems. I mean, Steve Ignor says it's Steve Ignor performing Crass. And people right. are like, Steve, you're not Crass. And Steve's like, I know I'm not Crass. I'm saying I'm Steve Ignor playing Crass. You see? So if Steve called himself Crass, that might be not as cool because he doesn't have Penny Rimbaud and Eve, you know. But I mean, like the other Hellhammer guys are passed away, I think. Is it actually important that he calls it Triumph of Death as opposed to Hellhammer, or is it all a stupid dance that we've all concocted for some reason?
I think it's maybe like, is he calling it Triumph of Death as a tribute to the departed members of Hellhammer?
Should he just call it Hellhammer? I'm saying is this dance with the name important? That's the question. Is this funny dance you're doing with the name, is that important?
If it's something to uphold a memory of someone or people, then I think it's completely valid. If it's not, then I don't really know why you do it.
But then how does using a different name uphold the memory of people that aren't in the band anymore?
Because it's, you're coming to see me playing these songs. You're not coming expecting these people to be playing or whatever, because their names are synonymous with Hellhammer, not with Triumph of Death.
Yeah, I guess you're right, and that, like, even though the other guys are dead, if he called it Hellhammer, in a way he's saying I'm the only important guy in Hellhammer. Whereas he called it Triumph of Death, he's by calling it Triumph of Death, he's essentially calling it the Tom G Warrior Band, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, fair enough. Anyways, if you can go see Triumph of Death, go see them because they're awesome. If you go see Triptychon, go see them; they're awesome. It is really cool how, like Tom G Warrior has like he's got Triptychon, doing Celtic Frost, and he's got Triumph of Death. So he's got all three of his bands functioning at the same time, and they're all basically the same band. In that, like, Celtic Frost and Triptychon had Martin Iain in it for a long time, or partially. And I think he was also in Hellhammer, and he was the main writer, or one of the main writers. And so, I mean, to me, Hellhammer, Celtic Frost, and Triptychon are all in the same line. Mm-hmm. But I think it's cool that he's got three separate entities playing all his music at once, which is pretty cool.
It is.
All right, Em, what should we wrap up today's show with?
Do you want to do the Catbite song?
Yes.
And Brian Fallon, or do you want to do more Weaver?
Ooh, we'll do Catbite because hopefully we'll have more on the podcast. I asked her,
oh, cool.
And we'll see if she responds or not. We are also going to have Eugene of Oxbow on the podcast and some other cool people coming up. We haven't had any guests in a while just because, I don't know, because we've been busy, man. Get off my back. You know what I mean? Screw you. So this is... Catbite and Brian Fallon. And more, any final words for tonight's episode before we send them on out with a Slackers cover?
Combat hate where you see it. Do not let hate stand. And go check out my interview with Amy Gabba of Amy Gabba and the Almost Famous. It's up on Punk News right now. If you like the Slackers, they have a really cool Slackers cover. Hey.
And here's another Slackers cover. It's Brian Fallon and Catbite. And we will see you next week.
Woo!
Thanks for watching the Chris Gothard Show, everybody. I hope you had as miserable a time as I did. I want to thank our celebrity guest, S.N. Hell's Booby Moynihan, and our comedy guest, Devastation Jason. We have a musical guest tonight as well, playing their hit single, Yes, It's True. Welcome, the one, the only, the Slot Yours. Take you.
from me, but they don't know what I do. I've been a lonely man for you. Blindfold that they put on me, make them think that I can't see all the tricks they try to do just to keep me away from you. Let them think they can, 'cause I'm just a little man. But they don't know what I do, 'cause I've been a lonely man. What could I say?
What could I say?
To keep you away from me.